overtime like that, he would have really been fidgeting. So. Makes me hope I didn't contribute too much to his early death by all the overtime speeches I've made. But I'll try to hold it. You're good enough to come this afternoon. I'll try to keep these comments very short. I'd like to try this afternoon to answer a couple of questions that were asked me some time ago. Back in the month of February last year, just almost exactly 1 year ago, I sent out a letter from the congregation at Lone Jack soliciting loans from congregations and individuals, and that was responded to very well. We hadn't sent it out but just 2 or 3 months before we had everything that we needed, and now the thing we need to do is not borrow more but to pay back what we've already borrowed. But I was asked a couple of questions based on the letter that I had sent out that I think are pertinent questions. These questions did not come from anybody in the congregation here, and they didn't even come from anybody that most of you know. But I thought they were worthwhile questions to consider, because we ought to always be asking ourselves about the things that we do and the things that we practice. And one of the questions that a man asked me was, should the body of Christ be indebted to any man? Not as individuals, but as the body. Is there a scriptural example of the New Testament church being in monetary debt? I thought that was a very interesting question, and one that needs to be considered. And I thought, I'm always casting about for things to talk with you about that I haven't talked to you about before. And this is one that we might just spend a moment on. I just found this question so interesting, looking at it from various points of view, and I told that man when I answered his question that I guess from the New Testament evidence that we have, if I was called on to give a yes or no answer to that question, is there a scriptural example of the New Testament church being in monetary debt? If I had to answer that yes or no, I would have to answer yes. But fortunately, I don't have to just answer yes or no. I get a chance to explain what I mean. And I say yes to that question because of what the Apostle Paul said about the Gentile churches in Macedonia and Achaia in their relationship to the Jewish church in Jerusalem. In Romans chapter 15, verses 26 and 27, the Apostle Paul said, "For it hath pleased them of Macedonia and Achaia to make a certain contribution for the poor saints which are at Jerusalem. It hath pleased them verily, and their debtors they are. For if the Gentiles have been made partakers of their spiritual things, their duty is also to minister unto them in carnal things." Now the question becomes at this point, was this a monetary debt that was owed by churches to a church? Paul says whose debtors they are. Their duty is to give them carnal things. When it's your duty to pay somebody something, that sounds like a debt to me. This was a debt that was going to be paid with money, according to the Apostle Paul, when Paul got to Jerusalem. In fact, the New International Version there says, indeed, they owe it to them. The Amplified Version says, they are in debt to them, and they paid that debt with money. Paul said to the same Roman Christians as individuals in Romans 13:8, owe no man anything but to love one another. We see from this and kindred passages that love itself obligates. When you love somebody, that love obligates you in their direction. In 1 John 3:16, we're told that we ought to lay down our very lives for the brethren. Sometimes this obligation that comes from love takes the form of money. The Lord's congregations are autonomous, but there is to be a spirit of mutuality, a spirit of reciprocity among God's people, individually and congregationally. At the end of the two-week meeting that was held a couple years ago up at Excelsior Springs, the Lone Jack congregation borrowed a soldier. If you were at any of that meeting, you may have seen a picture of a soldier that they had up the wall. I think it was during Dan Huff's class. They gave the soldier a name. His name was Romo. And the congregation at Lone Jack borrowed that for a specific purpose. Later on, they returned that. But suppose they had lost it, or they had damaged or destroyed it in some way. If that had happened, then the congregation at Lone Jack would have had a monetary debt to pay to Lone Jack. They would have found out what that soldier cost, and they would have paid that price. The fact that we have a relationship with each other is going to bring about these sorts of circumstances from time to time. As an individual, if you borrow a lawnmower from a neighbor, then you owe your neighbor a lawnmower back. That's in at least as good a shape as it was when you borrowed it. If your congregation borrows a lawnmower, then the congregation owes that lawnmower back. If for some reason you can't give the lawnmower back, then we give the monetary equivalent. Because money is merely a medium of exchange. Beyond that, there's nothing all that special about money. I don't think it exists in a category by itself. It's merely a medium of exchange. It's a commodity like any other commodity. Borrowing or lending a bottle of grape juice for the Lord's Supper is the same as borrowing or lending money, in my opinion, because money is a commodity like any other. Lending or borrowing Bibles, lending or borrowing songbooks, lending or borrowing chairs or tables, etc., which congregations do from time to time, I see that as all being in the same category as lending and borrowing money. The Lord borrowed a donkey. Remember, he said, "Tell the owner, the Lord hath need of him." Did the Lord give that donkey back? Well, we're not told specifically about how that worked out, but knowing the Lord, knowing the character of the Lord, I feel sure that he made sure that everything was made right. The Lord borrowed the use of an upper room for a while on one occasion. Did he leave that room in good shape? Was it in at least as good a shape after he left there as it was when he went into it? Again, we're not told the specifics of that, but we can draw our own conclusions based on his character. I have known of a few instances where one congregation used another congregation's meeting house for special meetings. This congregation here has loaned this meeting house for special meetings at times. That's been done on numerous occasions all over the place. I can't see that there's anything wrong with this, but it's no different, really, than loaning any other commodity. So that was my answer to that question. Now, the same man asked me another question. He wrote it down, and I'll just read what he wrote. Do we really need a single-purpose building for the sole purpose of meeting in? Do we just want a building and all the responsibilities and expenses that go with it, or is it a need, or is it maybe tradition? If it's okay to borrow $1,000, then why not $100,000 or $100 million. Where is that line? If we need a building, don't we need a Christian bookstore or at least a library to educate the public? Shouldn't we have a coffee shop to go with our bookstore? Don't we really need a gymnasium to bring the troubled teens in off the street? Surely we need a bus to bring the older adults to services in our building. Where is that line? Now, this is an excellent question. You may find parts of it facetious, but I think he is being facetious for the sake of making his point. And it's a point that needs to be made. It's a question that needs to be asked periodically. The root of the question is, do we really need a single-purpose building for the sole purpose of meeting in? Now, I know, and I answered him, I told him, I know that I don't need to prove to you that the church is supposed to assemble. Well, all of us are aware of Hebrews 10:25, not forsaking the assembling of yourselves together. 1 Corinthians 5, verse 4, the statement is made there by the apostle about when you are gathered together. Again, in 1 Corinthians 11, 18, Dale was referring to part of this passage this morning. When you come together in the church, that is, in the assembly. And again, in verse 20 of 1 Corinthians 11, when you come together, therefore, in one place. So we know that we are commanded as the church to meet together from time to time. I claim that the command to assemble necessitates a place in which to assemble or at which to assemble. Now, it would not have to be a building. I want to make that quite clear. There are some climates in this wonderful world that God has created where you could say, we'll just meet under that palm tree at noon on the first day of the week, and it would be perfect. I would really like that if we could do that here. But it would save so many things in so many ways if we could just do that. I've been to a lot of places where churches met in what you and I would call shelter houses. In some cases, it was in a climate where they started out with walls, but the walls kept getting blown off by typhoons, so they finally eventually just left them off, and it was like a shelter house. In other cases, I've been meeting with people in lean-tos that were attached to somebody's house. the house would exist there, and they just have a lean-to off to one side that was very inexpensively constructed, and the church met under that lean-to. Here in the Midwestern U.S., I don't have to tell you, with our unpredictable and often extreme weather, it seems that we do need someplace that's enclosed. Bibles that get rained on don't survive very well. We do need someplace that's enclosed. And that's the dilemma. This is the dilemma with which I have grappled for at least 40 years, if not longer. What is the best and simplest way for the church to have a place to assemble? The building where Paul assembled with the church in Troas, as recorded in the 20th chapter of the book of Acts, the church was using it, but we don't know under what circumstances they were using it. Did they borrow it? Did they rent it? Did they own it? I would love to know the answer to that, but I'm just not told. It seems that the Lord did not consider it important for us to know the answer to that question. Remember, the Lord is always just as vague as he intends to be. The vagueness in the Bible is never by accident. He always says exactly what he wants to say to us, not more and not less. When he's vague, when he's indefinite, there is a purpose behind that. He just didn't tell us what so often I would like to know in a passage of Scripture. He just didn't give us that information. He has his reasons for not giving us that information. But the questioner mentioned the responsibilities and the expenses that come with owning your own meeting house. And there are many, many of these, as you all are well aware. I don't need to list them for you. I have spent a lot of time here in our meeting house, as I think all, if not all of you, then almost all of you have. I've been here on many Saturdays for many hours. I have seen, I don't know how many of you here, cleaning, doing maintenance. I've seen you on top of the building working. I've seen you in the basement working, even under the floor down there sometimes, and everywhere in between, and it never ends. The maintenance of a structure like this one just never ends. And that is an argument in favor of not owning a meeting house. However, the mere necessity of assembling together as the church means that you're going to have responsibilities and expenses even if you don't meet in a building that's owned by the church. There's always going to be issues of heating and cooling and water and electricity and sewage and cleaning and maintenance, whether you own the place where you're meeting or not. So this has been my dilemma through the years. Sometimes it seems that the only thing worse than having a building is not having a building. I don't really like either option very well. But bottom line, each congregation needs to look at everything that's involved in its own situation and make its own decision about this. It's obvious to us that some New Testament congregations met in homes. At least they did sometimes. We read of the church that is in thy house on more than one occasion. Some of these homes had slaves to help out with things, with the practical considerations that were involved. If you meet in the home of a member, you are effectively, perhaps, limiting the size of your congregation to that which can meet in the biggest room that's available in the house of a member. Not the biggest house. It has nothing to do with the size of the house, as it has to do with the biggest space in that house where everybody can assemble. Quite often it would be a garage or a basement. It's not about the size of the building, but the configuration of the rooms so that we can come together in one place, as Paul said in 1 Corinthians. A garage or a basement usually has the biggest open area in most houses. We need to take into account, when we do that, the pressure on the hosting family that they may feel, whether we intend for them to feel that pressure or not. When we inundate them, in some cases, three times a week or maybe even more, no matter how much you try to alleviate that pressure on them by helping out, the women in the family in particular, often they have their identity woven into their home, and they especially need to be taken into account. The woman of the family may feel good until the new wears off when the church is meeting there. She may feel good for a year or for 3 years. My wife was wonderful about this when we had a church meeting in our home for a number of years. And there were advantages to it. We didn't all have to be ready for church at the same time. We could go down the stairs individually. We could come back upstairs individually. Didn't all have to leave the meeting at the same time. So there are good things about it. When it's a short-term issue, it's not necessarily the same as if it becomes a long-term issue. People get worn down by these types of things. Are we going to tell a homemaker that the church is going to meet in your home for the rest of your life? Are we prepared to do that? Do we have a policy for dealing with broken windows and other damaged property? Are we as a congregation, another consideration, are we as a congregation ever going to invite other brethren in for a weekend meeting or a two-week meeting so that our young people can get to know each other across the country? And if so, where are you going to do that? Probably not in the home that you're meeting in. There just wouldn't be room. But maybe we could rent a place to assemble for a weekend or for a couple of weeks. If we rent, we are at the mercy of the landlord. He may raise the rent. He may kick us out. He may change the circumstances in other ways. He may sell the property. There's a control issue there that becomes a very important factor at times. When your rent is due, you have a monetary debt to your landlord, just the same as if you were paying on a mortgage. I believe if you can rent a place to meet in, you can buy a place to rent to meet in, because the same principle is there. Money is changing hands. I have met in J.C. halls with brethren where on Sunday morning at 9 o'clock the stench of Saturday night's combination of liquor and vomit was quite prominent in the main room and was unbearable in the bathrooms. I've met in machine sheds where the smell of gasoline was so strong that it made me woozy after I was in there for a while. I've met in barns where we shoveled out manure before we set up chairs. Any of these things are doable. And if one of these is the best scenario for a congregation, that I say, God bless you, do it mightily as unto the Lord. Do the best you can with your situations. There are some situations that, after a while at least, begin to seem so inconvenient as to be impractical long term. When the congregation that's now called Smart Road was getting ready to begin, I looked high and low for a place to rent in the area where the people of that congregation lived, and just found nothing that was usable in any way. But our house, Lynn's and my house, was in that area, so we just said, come meet in our basement. And those who intended to be members helped us to fix the basement up as a meeting place, and it worked out very well. Some of you were there. We had a speaker stand in the corner and a blackboard across the corner. We had folding chairs off from that in two directions with an aisle between. We put a bathroom in the back and even a little cry room in the back and some classrooms over by the stairs, and it really worked out very well. We could get 80 people in there fairly comfortably. We had more than 100 people in there on various occasions, and it worked pretty well. We told that congregation, you're welcome to meet here as long as you're faithful to God and we own the house. But as the congregation grows, it becomes easier for the brethren to bear with inconveniences if they know that a change is coming. And for reasons that they thought of, they eventually built their own meeting house, as you know. The congregation in Lone Jack, for years after it began, met on the Lord's Day in the Lone Jack High School every Sunday morning. That congregation would come into the commons area, which is what we used to call a cafeteria, but out there they call it the commons area. It's used by the school as a cafeteria. Every Sunday morning they'd go in there, they had to fold up the big cafeteria tables and roll them away, and then get out the folding chairs and set them all up. They had to carry in song books from their vehicles, carry in their speaker stand and their whiteboard, and everything else that they were going to use, carry in the Lord's Supper preparations, whatever else they needed, they had to bring in their vehicles and carry it all in. Sometimes during the meetings on the Lord's Day, they would have people who came there for school activities, and they would traipse through or pass to part of the meeting to go on into the gym. After the Lord's Day meeting was over, the congregation at Lone Jack would have to undo everything that they did to get ready. Fold up all the folding chairs and put them away, bring the tables back and put them out after we mopped the floors or whatever, especially if we'd had a basket dinner there. Had to undo everything we'd done so that the place looked at least as good and just almost precisely the same as it had when we came there. Sometimes they couldn't use the commons area, so they had to meet in a classroom or another school building even in the same district in that town. They did that for 6 years. I think Kevin Fenton is to be commended. He was the only one that the school district would allow to have a key. So he not only had to be there first to let everybody in, but he had to be there last. After I stood talking to somebody for how long, and didn't realize that he was standing over at the edge waiting for me to leave so he could go do what he needed to do, he had to be there to lock up. There are inconveniences to that. And sometimes those of us who have our own building may forget just how convenient it is to have a place where we can just leave our things laid out, and when we leave, we can lock them up, and we expect them to be where they were when we left them the next time that we come back with our key into the building. In Lone Jack, they had an understanding with the school district from the beginning that this was a temporary arrangement. Actually, there's been at least 3 or 4 superintendents that have changed over since that agreement was made, but the school district has been superb to work with. Every superintendent has worked with us on this. I've met every one of them. It's been just wonderful to work with. The congregation did a number of community service projects to show our appreciation as a congregation to the community, and it worked out very well. It was good advertising for the church in the community. On Wednesday nights, they met in the basement of the Paul and Stephanie Bratcher home in Pleasant Hill, again, carrying in songbooks, setting up chairs, setting on those desk chairs that your congregation here gave to us. Remember those desk chairs that we used to have downstairs that we've had so many Bible studies in? Your congregation, when that congregation in Lone Jack began, you gave those chairs to Lone Jack, and those have been used hundreds of times to a very good purpose since that time. And I think the congregation sent you a letter of thanks about that. But when they began on Wednesday night, just meeting in a circle, you could sit anywhere in the circle and teach because you could see everybody in the circle. As the congregation grew or as more people were coming around, some of the people were in little alcoves here and there, and you had to sit in a certain place if you were going to teach so you could be able to see as many of the people as possible. We put in a basement bathroom so that people wouldn't be traipsing upstairs into the main part of that family home. I never heard any complaints from any of the members about any of those Sunday or Wednesday meetings in the schoolhouse or in the Bratcher home. But that may be in part because the congregation from its early days was always entertaining the possibility of building a meeting house. And now since 12-12-12, that was the first date that they met together in their new meeting house. They have been meeting in their own meeting house there in that town, and that's working out very well for them. It's terribly expensive, and that's what the questioner is really referring to here. It is terribly expensive. I mean, every time I'm involved in one of these projects, and I have been involved in, probably at least 7 of these during the course of my work over the years, every time I go through this, I'm shocked all over again at how it's sticker shock. It's always more expensive than I expect it to be. And this last one was very expensive to do this. But one old farmer put it in perspective for me and made me feel better when I told him the price that this meeting house was going to cost. He said, well, it's going to cost less than a combine, and it'll last a lot longer than a new combine. And that's really true. You know, I don't know if you've been in a combine lately. I have. I mean, I could live in the combines that some of these people, literally, I could live in there. Microwaves, television sets, I kid you not. It's all in these combines these days. And it's like riding on air out there, whether they're harvesting corn or beans. It's just like living in a little paradise. It's air conditioned. It's an amazing thing, but it's a big price tag on those combines. So that put it into perspective for me, at least, and it helped me to not gulp quite so hard at the amount of money that was borrowed. The congregation at Lone Jack is very, very appreciative of the fact that you have been supporting me all during the time of their existence. I have devoted a lot of time to them and trying to help them get their start. And they are well aware that the reason I've been able to do this is because you stand behind me financially. Anyway, that was the way that I answered those questions. Should the church be financially indebted? In my judgment, there are times and circumstances which makes this feasible. How much debt the church should take on is a judgment call to be made with wisdom. As far as the bookstore and the coffee shop and the gymnasium part, I would oppose that because it's not integral to what the church is supposed to be doing. And a couple of those things, the bookstore and the coffee shop, might even involve commerce that's outside the church's mission and purpose. So I think he was being facetious when he put that in the question. The line on this is really drawn by wisdom. I told him, don't have a bookstore or a coffee shop, but you can give these types of things away. You can give away appropriate books and appropriate coffee in order to help facilitate people's understanding of the church in your community. That's what we do at various fairs. And while other churches are there selling pies and all to make money, we just give things away. And it's a noticeable difference in the community. The Lone Jack Church has given away free water at the Lone Jack commemoration that is had every August to commemorate the Civil War Battle of Lone Jack. Every year, they just give away water, plus a few other things, too. But primarily water is what people come and get, especially if it's a hot August day. And people are always saying, how much is it? I'm trying to pay for it. It's a noticeable difference between the Lord's church and the way it functions and the churches that man has developed and that are often trying to make money on these types of occasions. So those are a few things to think about with regard to how the church handles itself in a practical level, fulfilling the commandment to meet. And I thought you might like to think about that with me for a few minutes. It's been great to be here with you today. Once more, as we conclude, we want to extend the invitation of our Lord. If anybody is subject to the gospel call today on any level and in any way, please come forward to the front as we stand and sing, "There's a Fountain Free," no matter what number it is and which book.